Good afternoon. This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:08 p.m. Monday, March 30th, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Fields, Representative Kalum, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Representative Elam, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Representative Freer, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Dibert. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you very much. And let the record reflect that we have been joined by Representative Prox. I'd like to thank Andrew Giannotti from Records and Renzo Moises from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Committee members, today we have one item on the agenda, which is to take up House Bill 321, Fish and Game Wildlife Refuge, from Representative Josephson and his policy advisor, Joe Meehan, to answer questions of the committee, review some new maps, and take up public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Meehan and Representative Josephson. I can tell you that you put a lot of work into this and time and making sure the committee members' questions were answered. And we appreciate that. Thank you so much. So please come forward and put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and Committee. I'm Andy Josephson, House District 13 in South Midtown.
Madam Chair, committee members, appreciate the opportunity to be here again. Joe Meehan, staff for Representative Josephson.
All right. Do you ready for questions, or do you have an opening statement, Representative?
I'll just speak briefly. I was here for the entire first hearing. The second one, I was, I'm sure, in finance. This is the third hearing. Finance is not calendared today. The bill, as you know, its main feature is to take areas currently under fish and game management anyway. I emphasize anyway, lands that fish and game has come into possession of, and treat them as part of either a refuge or a sanctuary, since they're being managed in that way anyway. That's its main feature. There is, as you can see on this slide, there is the further closure of McNeil from brown bear hunting, but only in a way the Board of Game has sanctioned for decades in any case, many, many decades. As I've understood, there have been some changes in the CS so that I think there was concerns about fish and game limiting access to firearms, and I think that the committee substitute largely deals with that. Those are some of the principal points. We know that the closure in two areas in Kitchmack Bay of the personal watercraft is a contentious point. We also note in this bill that we're trying to make it clear that Fish and Game would not be regulating ANCSA lands adjoining or actually technically part of some of these refuges. I have a meeting with the ANCSA leaders tomorrow that I've organized, and I think they're going to welcome that change. That is, this lack of restriction that technically is in the law, but fish and game sort of largely for, frankly, sovereignty reasons, stays away from. So there are a number of things like that in this bill. I would note that most of what this bill does was passed by the legislature in the 2017-18 term by enormous majorities. It was like 35-5, for example, in the House. In the original instance, we have answered in a seven-page memo a lot of the questions the committee has asked. We have solicited and received huge numbers of letters of support that Mr. Meehan can describe. And we, out of my office funds, paid several thousand dollars to have a professional map maker make this new set of maps. So with that, I just will close my opening statement.
Thank you, Representative Josephson, for that quick overview. Before we move on to testimony, are there any further questions from the committee for Rep. Josephson or his staff? Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have the opportunity to ask more questions of the sponsor, or is this our only opportunity?
Well, we have testimony, mm-hmm. and maybe that might answer some questions that we might have, and maybe during wrap-up.
Well, in that case, I do have, if not a question, a statement. This is an extraordinarily large bill, and we have had a lot of new material. In previous times we had this bill before us, I've asked for more precise maps, and more readable, and I appreciate the sponsor for digging in his own pocket to do that. However, as we requested, I'd asked that these be at least paginated so we could go from page to page. There's 19 new maps. That's great. But they're not paginated, and they are not linked with the sections of the bill to which they make reference, as I had also asked, and the sponsor's aide had said he would do, but we don't have those. So what that does, Madam Chair, is it makes it very difficult to cross-reference the language in the bill, this 80-some page bill, with the 20-plus maps and other documents to fully, or even minimally, understand the effects of the bill. So I do hope that we have the opportunity again, once now that we have this information that came to my office this morning, to look at it and understand the bill so we can ask intelligent questions and offer any necessary amendments or find what we love it and want to vote for it. I just ask for more time to consider this big bill and have the information in a usable format. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
if I might.
Representative Josephson, would you like to respond?
Yes, on March 17th, I think the maps were distributed at least to the committee longer ago than that. But the memo that we distributed March 17th highlights where the maps are relevant in each section of the bill. So the request made by Representative Sadler, I think, is basically satisfied by this memo.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Although the memo is dated March 17th, I did not receive it until today.
I have another question or comment from Representative Kalum.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, through the Chair. So I'm just trying to get clarity. So we've got game refuges, wildlife refuges, game sanctuaries, wildlife sanctuaries, and critical habitat areas. And what the bill is trying to do is take all of those and either call them a wildlife sanctuary or a wildlife refuge. Is that?
Through the Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and so in the bill, the land that is called a game refuge or wildlife refuge, did any of the land switch from a refuge to a sanctuary in your bill?
Mr. Meehan, do you want to?
Yes, Mr. Meehan.
Through the Chair, Representative Kalum, no, none of the lands changed from refuge to sanctuary.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
And I guess nothing that's a sanctuary now switched to refuge.
Through the Chair, Representative Cullen, that's correct.
Okay, and one more
follow-up?
Clarification.
Yep.
So, but the wildlife sanctuaries, that's where there's no hunting access, correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Cullen, generally that is correct. There is limited hunting in one of the sanctuaries, in the Walrus Island State Game Sanctuary.
Okay.
The McNeil Sanctuary and the Stan Price Sanctuary or Peck Creek does not have any hunting in it at all.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Mr. Meehan. Okay, with that, before we move on to testimony, we'll now move on to testimony for House Bill 321. For public testimony, we held invited testimony at a previous hearing. So, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify in House Bill 321? Seeing none, we have a number of people signed up to testify today, so I will be limiting remarks to 2 minutes. If you're still speaking at that point, I'll ask you to begin to wrap up, and we'll need to conclude your testimony shortly after so we can hear from everyone at an equal amount of time. So now with that, we will start with, it looks like at Homer LIO, Nancy Lord. If you can hear me, put your name on the record and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
This is Nancy Lord in Homer. I'm speaking for myself. I want to speak just in favor of the whole bill and urge you to move it along. As you know, session is short. I have a few particular comments, but it just makes great sense to add those little bits to the state refuges here and there once they were kind of left off the earlier mapping. So I hope that that would not have any controversy. I know the area here around Homer well in the Bay, and the additions to the local refuges here would be a very good idea. If you like to rename the Beluga Wetlands Refuge, that would be great with me. That was the original name of it before the legislature along the way renamed it to the Homer Airport. So it would just be going back to what was originally proposed. I'm also in favor of restoring the personal watercraft ban. The process the administration used to remove the ban was deeply flawed. And the local people, can't speak for everyone, but people who know the Bay well do not think it's a great idea to have personal watercraft in the Bay. I have lots of time. Okay. I'm also very familiar with the McNeil Bear Sanctuary, where I've been 5 times over there, and just wanted to know what a treasure that place is. Thank you, Chair, people, and committee members. I appreciate having the opportunity today.
Thank you, Nancy, for your testimony. We're going to go to our Representative Sadler. Do you have a question for?
Yes, ma'am. Is it possible to offer a question to Ms. Lord?
Ms. Lord, yes. Representative Sadler has a question for Nancy, if you can still hear us.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Nancy. Very briefly, you said that the process for the lifting the ban on personal watercraft in Kachemak Bay was flawed. I believe that went through judicial determination. Do you believe that judicial process was flawed? Or what, when you say it was flawed, can you identify specifically what you're speaking of, please?
Ms. Lord?
Yes, when the Department of Fish and Game and the administration decided to remove the ban, they counted all those people who signed petitions around the country who were associated with personal watercraft to have equal weight with local people who had very thoughtful and knowledgeable comments, and so that's how they came up with a majority of people favoring the removal of the ban. That was my thoughts about the process.
Not unlike Congress stuff, but okay. Thank you, Minister.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lord, again for your testimony. And just for the committee's knowledge, we have Alpheus Boulard from Ledge Legal, Doug Vincent Lang from ADF&G, and Andy Mills, DOT, to help us with any questions that we might not be able to answer here in the room. So let's go to our second testifier, Rika. Pardon me for the mispronunciation. I'm going to say Mao from Homer LIO.
Yes, my name is Rika Mao in Homer. I have already written the committee 2 letters of support for HB 321. I feel this bill demonstrates an awareness for adapting to, updating, and clarifying the managing structure of the priceless and irreplaceable wildlife and habitats this state still has and stewards, not only for the state, but for the country and for the world. This bill comes with minimal costs and huge benefits. I'm very familiar with the Homer area, and especially the Homer Airport Critical Habitat area, in which the adjoining conservation lands protected by Kachemak Moose Habitat, Inc., the borough, Kenai Borough, and willing private landowners to have these lands included in a newly named Beluga Wetlands Wildlife Refuge. I urge you to support all aspects of this bill in order to give it traction and action through the process of the last remaining part of this session. And I agree with Nancy Lord about the personal watercrafts and the way that the administration and ADF&G pulled that ban away. There was really no scientific backing for pulling that ban, and the ban was based on a lot of scientific information and backing. So I want to thank you for this opportunity and truly urge you to get this moved through the committee and on to the rest of the process this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mao, for your testimony. I'm going to move to our third testifier, Robert Archibald, from Homer LIO. If you could hear me, put your name, state your name, and state your affiliation for the record.
Morning, Chair. It's afternoon, actually. Chair Dibert.
Dibert,
thank you. I'm Robert Archibald. I'm the chair of Kachemak Bay State Park Citizens Advisory Board here in Homer. I'm representing 12 people on that board. Our purpose is to provide a forum for the collection and expression of opinions and recommendations on matters relating to the state parks units within the Kachemak Bay watershed. Our board on the Kachemak Bay State Parks fully supports HB 321. Kachemak Bay, which is a designated critical habitat, it joins two others in this bill. Fritz Creek Critical Habitat Area and the Fox River Critical Habitat Area. We understand the need to simplify and modernize statutes and work on boundary lines. This bill will accomplish those needs. On personal watercraft, we discussed that extensively at this board. We had public comment. Most of the public was not in favor of we were not in favor of rescinding ban on personal watercraft at that time. So thank you for allowing me to testify. That's all I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert, for your testimony. I'm going to move to Homer LIO again, to Mako Haggerty. If you could hear me, state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mako Haggerty. I live here in Homer, and today I represent the Friends of Kachemak Bay State Parks. We're a local nonprofit that helps support the Kachemak Bay State Park. And we also fully support this bill. I'd like to thank the sponsors for all their work. This is a comprehensive bill. Just glancing at it, it looks like there's been a lot of work put into this, and I'd like to thank them for that, because we're very concerned about protecting our natural habitats here, and this is a very important one to us. It's our view shed, and it provides great recreational opportunities. In my past life, I was a commercial fisherman. I got to travel the state, and I'm familiar with some of these, not all of them, but some of these sanctuaries, and they need to be protected. In my present life, I'm a water taxi owner, and the values of the bay and the land across the bay has great value, and if we preserve it, that value will be sustainable, and that's what that type of sustainable value provides. Great, it becomes an economic engine, and this bill is goes a long ways to addressing that. And I too am opposed to having a personal watercraft here. We worked very hard to ban the personal watercraft. And, you know, there's a lot of water in the state of Alaska. There's lots of places the personal watercraft can play around. So it's not like those opportunities aren't out there for the personal watercraft. But
Mako, please wrap up.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the committee and the sponsors of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mako, for your presentation and for the mispronunciation of your name. Okay, we're going to move on to our next testifier. This is Wayne Hall from Anchorage. If you can hear us, please put your name on the record and state your affiliation.
Yes, my name is Wayne Hall. I live in Anchorage, and I'm speaking for myself. I'm a 48-year Alaska resident, and I support HB 321. It will clarify some of the management and boundary issues. They've been outstanding since many of these special areas were established. It will also establish in statute the closure of McNeil Refuge and Kemmerschack Special Use Area to brown bear hunting, along with the McNeil Sanctuary, which is already closed by statute. This will protect brown bears that roam throughout the area and adjacent Katmai National Park, which are so famous and valuable to Alaskans and the worldwide bear viewing community. It will remove the possibility of ill-fated bear hunting season proposals to the Alaska Board of Game, which would only generate animosity between user groups, damage the reputation for a significant and growing tourism industry and source of bear viewing revenue to Alaska businesses and residents. I also support the logical change of refuge and sanctuary names from game to wildlife as being more representative of the nature and intent of these special areas. And I urge you to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you, and thanks to Representative Josephson and Mr. Meehan for their hard work on this.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hall, for your testimony today. I'm going to go to Mike Taylor. If you could hear us from Gustavus, state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. Okay. We will try to find Mike later on in the line of the queue. So, Mike, if you could hear us, try to call in again. So we're going to go to Hal Shepard. Homer, again, if you could hear us, Hal, please put your name on the record and state your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Hal Shepard, and today I am representing the Kachemak Bay Watershed Council, which is a all-volunteer nonprofit organization that focuses on the health and aquatic welfare of the Kachemak Bay watershed ecosystem. And I am simply going to just state that we support all aspects of the bill, and especially the beluga wetland provisions that will help protect valuable green space, valuable wetlands, valuable winter moose habitat. And also the ban on personal watercraft, and we support the revocation of allowing personal watercraft in the Bay Area, simply because, as has already been stated, not supported by the science to have those kinds of machines in a critical habitat area that is designed specifically for the protection of fish and wildlife. Thank you for your time, and I really appreciate the committee's listening to my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard, for your testimony today. We're going to go to John Rose from Anchorage. If you can hear us, state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is John Ross, Alaska State Director for the Conservation Fund, calling in with testimony in support of House Bill 321. The Conservation Fund is a national 501c3 nonprofit organization that has had permanent staff in Alaska since 1994. We've worked with the state of Alaska on dozens of projects to expand state conservation and recreation units, including Framers Field, Anchorage Coastal, Goose Bay, and Palmer Hay Flats refuges. House Bill 321 would make necessary changes to the boundary of the Kramer's Field Migratory Waterfowl State Game Refuge to include 688 acres purchased by the Conservation Fund and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with funds from the Federal Pittman-Robertson Act and matched by private philanthropy. The addition of that 688 acres of land to the refuge will conserve wildlife habitats and expand the educational, recreational, and research opportunities at the refuge for generations to come. Finally, I've been encouraged to let this committee know that the Conservation Fund and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game are currently working to purchase an additional 375 acres adjacent to the current Kramer's Field Refuge boundary that would all but complete the logical refuge footprint. Those additional 375 acres, which I think will be included as an addendum to this bill, include waterfowl and shorebird habitats not found elsewhere in the refuge. The last critical piece of the Jeff Sutter Memorial Trail system not currently in the refuge, and provide additional public recreation and access opportunities. That concludes my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ross, for your testimony, and I invite anyone to come visit Kramer's Field Wildlife Refuge. It is a beautiful wild refuge, and to hear that it's going to gain more land is amazing. So thank you for your testimony, Mr. Ross. I'm going to go to Graham Wood from Eagle River. If you could hear us, put your name on the record and state your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Graham Wood. I represent the Alaska Waterfowl Association. The association is largely supportive of House Bill 321. In our initial read of that, I had some concerns with the rewritten portions of Alaska Statute 1620.028, which discussed that the Department of Fish and Game can close all or parts of a refuge for public safety when it was discussing the discharge of firearms. I had a discussion with Mr. Meehan this morning, and that was, you know, talked about my concerns about that around the Rabbit Creek Rifle Range as well. And while there's some common sense approaches to that, that particular wildlife refuge, speaking of waterfowl hunting, only has a couple of access points, and one of which isn't really viable. So I'm hoping that the I haven't seen the committee changes to this portions of the bill, but I'm hoping that that will be better fleshed out so that waterfowl hunters across the state, and particularly in the Anchorage and Natsu areas, don't lose access to these precious public lands. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood, for your testimony this afternoon. I'm going to move on to Lynn Whitmore from Anchor Point. If you could hear us, state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes, this is Lynn Whitmore. I'm with Cachemac Moose Habitat. I previously testified, so I won't bore you with all my details. I had omitted a suggestion that you also consider adding the Anchor River and Ruby Creek properties that we have to the critical habitat. I'm a moose hunter, and my concerns was that this new bill might lock something up because we purposely put no signs on, no hunting and no trespassing signs. We have none on any of our property, and it's all accessible, and we plan on keeping it that way, and we're going to continue to add properties to our company, and hopefully we can continue to move stuff over to the critical habitat. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Whitmore, for your testimony. We have a question or a thought after this testimony from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whitmore, just wanted to clarify, I'm not sure if you were saying you did support the bill or did not support the bill, or yes with provisions. I'm not quite sure what your position is, please.
Mr. Whitmore?
When I first looked up at the provisions, I was concerned about access and shutting the hunting down, which is what I do, and I saw no concern there whatsoever, and I highly support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitmore. I'm going to move on to our next testifier, Britton Goldberg from Anchorage. If you could hear us, state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Hi, this is Britton Goldberg, Chief of Leasing for Central Region Aviation Leasing, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I signed on for questions only regarding the House bill. So I do not have any testimony to share at this point in time.
Well, I am so glad that you are here. Thank you, Britton, for being online, ready to answer any questions. We will go to Nancy Hillstrand from Seldovia. If you could hear us, state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes. My name is Nancy Hillstrand. I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. We've had a corporation here in Alaska for 60 years. And I've lived here right in the critical habitat area of Ketchmack Bay for 53 years, so I've been watching a lot of things going on. They're the golden goose of Alaska, and it's right in plain sight because it can be the diversify our economy. And I ask that you look at the ABF&G economic importance of wildlife in Alaska, because it gives you some numbers on what is brought into Alaska by wildlife. I ask that you put back 162510 to this bill. It was taken out, and it looks like it's been sort of put into 1620020, which is on page 4, line 3. But it's not as strong a wording, and I think the boards of Fish and Game do need to be able to recognize that when they are dealing in a critical habitat area or wildlife refuge, that they have to be more careful with their management. And the reason I say this is from experience, because we here in Ketchmack Bay actually, because there was no care in the fishing regulations, we pretty much took them over the edge. And these, most all of our fish has been removed and has been closed for close to 30 years now. So the care of the taking of fish and wildlife must be in this bill, and the boards of Fish and Game need to somehow be able to be connected to this, because 1620 is far away from 1605, where they're looking at their statutes authority. I also think there should be definitions, because the other problem I've seen is the word habitat does not include the biological attributes like the zooplankton and things like that. And so when we don't consider the food web, we can't perpetuate fish and wildlife unless we have the food web in there also. So thank you very much. I appreciate you listening to this. This bill is a good one, but we need to definitely make sure that the taking of fish and wildlife is done with care so these places can be a showcase. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hillstrand, for your testimony this afternoon.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Hillstrand, we might have a thought or question or comment from Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Ms. Hillstrand, do you have specific sections of the bill that you were referring to statutes? And there's about 3 days in trying to figure out which statutes. This is a big bill. But do you have a specific section?
Yeah, well, it's in the very front first page. It talks about 1625.10, and it's removed it. It's in brackets. It says 510 through, I don't have it in front of me right now, but 530, I'm also concerned about that being taken out. And then I do see it's been put back in sort of, kind of, on page 4, line 3, where it's under 1620.020 purpose. And this sort of includes the 1625-10, which I'm very concerned about, but it's not strong enough. And how do we connect this authority so the board of fish and wild and game both understand that they need to, where appropriate, protect these fish and wildlife so we can perpetuate them, not just remove them? Does that answer your question?
It helped. Thank you.
I think it's been taken out. 510 and 530 have been completely removed from the old bill, and I think they need to be put back in.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Prox. And Representative Sadler, did you have a... Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hillstrand, for your testimony this afternoon. And before we... I'm going to check one more testifier to see if they made it back online. Mike Taylor from Gustavus, if you can hear us, state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Hello, I'm Mike Taylor. I speak as the City of Gustavus Conservation Lands Advisory Committee to recommend the passage of HB 321. The bill will add two important wildlife habitat tracts to the Dew Creek Critical Habitat Area and redesignate it as the Dew Creek Wildlife Refuge. At our March meeting, the advisory committee recommended a supporting resolution to the mayor of Gustavus. The city council will address it at the April 13 general meeting. Gustavus has long supported the Dew Creek Critical Habitat Area since its 1988 establishment. The critical habitat area is vital habitat for sandhill cranes, moose, bears, wolves, and other wildlife, and is an important recreation and hunting resource for Gustavus. In 2004, the Nature Conservancy purchased over 4,000 acres of exceptional conservation lands here in Gustavus from the Alaska Mental Health Trust. It was the largest purchase TNC has made in Alaska. Tracts A and B of the Gustavus Flats between the southern boundary of the critical habitat area and the shore of Icy Strait were conveyed to the Alaska DNR under an agreement that they would be included in the Dew Creek Critical Habitat Area. In accordance with that agreement, the state has for 22 years managed tracts A and B similarly to the adjacent habitat area, pending their formal inclusion by the legislature. The City of Gustavus has long supported the formal expansion of the Dew Creek Critical Habitat Area to include those two tracts. HB 321 will finally complete the intent of the 2004 land conveyance and redesignate the Dew Creek Critical Habitat Area as the Dew Creek Wildlife Refuge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor, for your testimony, and it sounds like a very beautiful place. Seeing no further testimony, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony.
Oh, well, oh, that'd be fine. The Fish and Game and DP are still online, right?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have a question, Representative Prox?
Yes, please. Okay. So, through the chair to the Commissioner of Fish and Game, I guess the general question, have you reviewed that? And are there any sections that maybe, I think most of this bill is details, but there are some sections that are controversial, and I wonder if there's any that should be taken out for further review by your recommendation, if you have one.
Okay. Chair? If I may, can I interrupt? I don't think we closed public testimony, and I don't know if we should have the department talk.
Oh, that's what I was wondering. Sorry.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead and do that, Representative Prox.
Yep.
All right. Seeing no more further public testimony, I'm going to close public testimony. And Commissioner Vincent Lang, if you're on, if you could hear us, put yourself on record and see if we could answer Rep. Prox's question.
Good morning, Mr. Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Vincent Lang, and the Commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. let me just kind of walk through the bill from our perspective. The boundary corrections that Representative Bilstein has identified in this bill are very similar to what we had in the 2018 governor's bill in the new additions for land acquired since then. Correcting these errors and adding new land parcels for these special areas is supported by the department. The bill changes the name of special areas from state game refuges, state game sanctuaries, and critical habitat areas to be more consistent and only uses the terms wildlife refuge and wildlife sanctuary. The bill combines the existing purposes of state game refuges, sanctuaries, and critical habitat areas, including the protection and preservation of fish and wildlife populations and restricting any incompatible uses. However, we are concerned about how the statutorily defined purpose statements are morphed into new designations. For example, do existing state game refuges now have to be treated as critical habitat areas? Mm-hmm. The committee section clarifies the Katmai area closed to bear hunting, referenced in the original version of the bill, refers to as the Kamishak Bay area. While the bill closes in areas that have long been closed, the department believes that decisions regarding bear hunting most appropriate lie within the Alaska border game and not with legislative closures. We clarified with the bill sponsor that the provisions related to regulating discharge of firearms provides ADF&G permissive authority to close limited areas around access sites to firearms. We are neutral, but note that this could be helpful to have to limit target shooting near access sites to these special areas. The bill would prohibit the use of personal watercraft in Kamishak Bay. The decision to allow the use of jet skis by ADF&G was upheld by the Alaska Supreme Court. The department is opposed to this provision. It also changes the terminology will result in nominal cost of about $45,000 to update signs, including staff travel. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Price? Or we'll come back, you think. Yeah. Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Vincent Lang, either you are one silver-tongued devil or you were reading from some prepared comments, and if you had notes or prepared comments, I would very much appreciate the chance to read through them in detail. Could you provide those written comments to the committee, please, and to me specifically?
Yes, certainly.
I really need to hear all that.
I'll get those to the chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. Any further questions from the committee?
I have one.
Representative Klum.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, thank you for your statement, Commissioner. My main concern around the bill is the access to hunting and fishing, because a lot of these pieces of land are on the water's edge. Do you have any general feel of like this, that this would restrict hunting and fishing in any of these areas?
Commissioner?
Through the chair. Largely, I think, other than how we morph the definitions of critical habitat areas, sanctuaries, and state game refuges into one, I think generally the bill allows the continuation of hunting and fishing on these lands. But again, because the definitions were morphed into one, you could be more restrictive in terms of how you're managing what is now a wildlife refuge or a sanctuary, because now in the past the wildlife refuge was managed more for hunting and fishing, and if you morph into that a critical habitat requirement, you may end up having the restricted uses that could be incompatible with hunting and fishing.
A follow-up?
Yep,
building access trails and other things.
Thank you, Commissioner. Follow-up?
Yes, Commissioner. So that's what I was wondering. Can you tell me what's the difference in management between a refuge and critical habitat right now?
Well, to the chair, to my understanding is that a refuge is really an area that you're providing is refugia for wildlife, but you can have sustainable hunting and fishing going on there. Critical habitat is basically areas where you're trying to manage the habitat at the expense of everything else, for instance, hunting and fishing. So if you need to provide access into there to go do something, or you need to provide some kind of habitat manipulation, increase wildlife risk, increase wildlife populations for hunting and fishing, that might be more difficult if you carry forward that aspect of the critical habitat designation into a newly defined wildlife refuge.
And can I have one more follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Follow-up?
Thank you, Commissioner, for answering questions. This is a pretty comprehensive bill, so I just want to make sure I know what the impacts are. Do you anticipate the pieces of land around Potter's Marsh on top of the possible firearm restriction, do you think that's going to affect the ability for Rabbit Creek shooting range to stay open?
Well, through the chair, I think just probably the opposite, because right now we have people that are downrange from the they're riding bikes and recreating on the refuge that are going into potential harm by overshots of the range. So if we can close those areas where the rifle range is open, prevent that kind of impact, I think we'll be able to keep the rifle range open.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. We have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Actually, two questions. One, a follow-up to Representative Clums. Given the manpower and budget restraints, how would you effectively, you know, practical on the ground, how would you indicate that an area was closed during the operation, the shooting range, to achieve the public safety goals you just described? Would there be gates? Would there be a flashing light? How would people know, to those who wanted to obey the law and obey the closure, how would they know that there was shooting?
Yeah. Commissioner?
Red flag?
Through the chair, we haven't really figured that out yet, but I like the concept of a flashing light down there somehow.
On the range, you have a flashing, waving red flag.
Then your second question, Representative Sadler.
Yeah, thank you. Terminology is important, and certainly the definition of what a refuge and a habitat area and so forth. And I know the federal government has their own style book, and they use their own terminology. Would the changes envisioned by this bill tend to clarify confusion between state and federal land designations or exacerbate confusion, Commissioner?
Through the chair, we've always been somewhat mystified why federal land refuges are designated as state game refuges or state wildlife refuges. And the federal refuge program has been long established. They have their own regulations that govern those lands and why we have in our statutes a recognition of those federal game refuges as state refuges has always been perplexing to me, because we really have very limited authority over them. And I certainly don't think that if we tried to exert our authority within those lands, that we would have much say or they would respect to have much say in implementing them. So that's always been a perplexing question to me, and I was hoping that at some point in time we would clean up that state recognition of federal refuges, because federal refuges aren't going away. And it just seems odd that we would have an overlay of duplicative and sometimes inconsistent regulations for those federal land communities.
Follow-up?
It would seem to me, Commissioner, that this being a large modification and a cleanup bill might be the best opportunity you're likely to have, or we're likely to have in some time, to achieve that clarity. And I would look forward to talking to you about ways we might effect that clarity in this legislation. So expect a call, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang and Representative Settler. We have a next question to Representative Elam.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for taking questions. I was just curious if you could give me some insight onto what kind of impacts personal watercraft's having in Kachemak Bay.
Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair. So that was probably one of the more interesting choices I had when I became commissioner was the decision to evaluate whether jet skis should be allowed in Kachemak Bay. You know, I know that right now you can use a jet boat. You can use an aircraft, you can use an airboat, you can use landing crafts, a whole wide range, and there's no horsepower restriction on Kachemak Bay in terms of the speed of crafts or anything else. So when I looked at it, and I looked very carefully at the science behind it, and I looked at the relationship of a jet ski versus those other equipment, and I looked across the country and saw how jet skis were used and some of the new modifications of jet ski technology, I couldn't in my mind why we would not allow jet skis to be in Kachemak Bay versus all those other craft. And then I also looked at the existing regulations that apply to protection of marine mammals, and you can't harass marine mammals whether it be with a jet boat or a jet ski. So I thought there were existing protections in place through the Marine Mammal Act and other things that would allow for the protection of marine mammals and bird flocks out there. So the I decided at the end of the day that we could allow jet ski use in the bay and not have any significant impact to waterfowl or marine mammals in the bay.
Let me follow up.
Follow-up, Representative.
I was just curious if you could maybe tell me if there was any kind of impacts to, like, the coastal areas there by comparison to, say, the tide that's, what is it, like 24 to 26-foot tides versus the amount of water impact that the coastal erosion would have from a jet ski?
Through the chair, we haven't noticed any significant impacts since the jet ski ban has been repealed.
If I may follow up?
Follow-up.
Correct me if I'm wrong, don't we bring 100-ton ships through there and countless commercial watercraft along with just a variety of boats and aircraft and, I mean, you name it. It seems like it pretty much all goes there. Why would we limit the access of a jet ski?
Through the chair, again, after I reviewed all the science and I reviewed all the compatible uses to date that we allow in Kachemak Bay, I couldn't come to the conclusion that a jet ski was any more impactful than any of those other pieces of equipment that could be used in the bay currently.
Okay, thank you. And one more follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you, yes. You know, when we start talking about other concerns when it, say, is view shed, and maybe this is more of a DOT or DNR question, but if memory serves correctly, the state of Alaska really doesn't do much specifically with view shed rights. I know that whenever I was on the aggregate work group for the Kenai Peninsula, we dealt with a lot of local zoning, local option zoning, and various zoning laws and regulations within the city of Homer. And the city of Homer had some very specific regulations when it came to view shed, but I don't think that either the borough nor the state actually really took much of a stance on that. Is there maybe some kind of federal law that I'm overlooking?
Through the chair, other bodies have regulatory authority over different kinds of activities, and nobody weighed in since I made that decision to allow the jet ski. So there are conflicting overlays, like DNR still has a jet ski ban in the Kachemak Bay State Park across from there. So again, we haven't noticed any significant negative impact, and I think it's more of a social call than a biological call.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. We have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Commissioner Vincent Lang, heard that the question of personal watercraft in Kachemak Bay Critical Habitat Area, I believe I got the name right, has gone to the state Supreme Court and has been decided. Is there a risk of a balance of power issue should the legislature pass a statute that would appear to contravene the Supreme Court's decision?
I think through the chair, I think that would be best to ask of an attorney. From my viewpoint, the system works, and you can, if in fact at some point in time we have evidence that some other kind of activity should be allowed, the discretion should be resting with the commissioner rather than through legislative designation.
And do we have will we have the chance to
follow up?
Thank you. Will we have the chance to ask an attorney that question as the commissioner suggests?
Let's see. We have,
Madam Chair, Mr. Bullard is online.
Yes, we do have Ledge Legal online. So that would be Mr. Bullard. If you could hear us, state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon, members, Chair of the House Resources Committee. This is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. And through the chair, I believe I heard Representative Sadler's question as to whether the question of jet skis had already been litigated. And I don't know if that's really a fair characterization. It was, you know, it had to do the existing case with who had the discretion to make that decision. So it wasn't really whether jet skis are a good or a bad idea in that area. It was sort of the process and who gets to make that decision. And so if the legislature were to elect to prohibit personal watercraft, it would be a different legal question.
Thank you, Mr. Bullard. Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
To clarify, Mr. Bullard, I believe I heard you, but I think you said that the question the Supreme Court decided was whether the commissioner of ADF&G had the authority to make a decision to allow or disallow watercraft. So it was the question of the commissioner's discretion and not the actual issue of watercraft in the bay or not. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think that's an accurate summation of my remarks. I would hope to speak so well.
Good. And as the commissioner said, he thinks, well, he expressed the view that that should be a decision by the commissioner rather than the legislature. But that may be what we call a policy call. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Representative Prox.
Yes, through the chair, we haven't heard from the Department of Transportation as to whether they have any general concerns with this bill. And I guess I am specifically interested in the Creamers Field Refuge from both the Department of Fish and Game and the Department of Transportation.
All right, so let's see. Andy Mills, if you can hear us, state your name.
Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Mills. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I did hear the question from Representative Prax. I don't have any input on that. We do have some state staff that were not available to join today because it's a holiday for them and they were on leave. I was here to try and capture some other areas of questions like the Homer Airport or the Potter Marsh area, but certainly if there's something else I can answer, let me know.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Follow-up. As long as you're here, the Homer Airport, if that, all else being equal, if that attracts more geese and ducks, that could potentially cause a hazard to aviation. Has the department thought about that?
Through the chair to Representative Brooks, thank you for the question. So, yeah, active wildlife mitigation or hazing, as it's often known, hazing program, around airports, there is certainly a consideration for the safety aspect of any designation. I know in this case, we're talking to the sponsor's office about the designation. And for the Homer Airport in particular, we did talk through boundary passage to better understand what the activity was expected to be. And we're working to ensure that some of the designated areas don't conflict with some of the AIP-funded lease areas, which Mr. Goldberg on the line can also speak more closely to. On the wildlife, I don't know that we would a change between those the current environment around the airport, with sort of marshy and wetlands, to what we would expect to see under this designation. So I think from that wildlife hazing or birds in the area, I don't know that we would have a consideration of seeing something significant, but I also have not had a discussion on the analysis of that.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. Let's go ahead and go to Chief Goldberg. If you could state your name and speak to this part of the mm-hmm. bill for Representative Prox.
Chief of Central Region Aviation Leasing for DOT and PF, Britton Goldberg, for the record, for Representative Prox. If you could repeat the question as it may pertain to land use agreements.
Representative.
Certainly, through the chair, I'm concerned. I have no idea whether enhancing, if you will, the wildlife aspects by the Homer Airport would create additional hazards to aviation and whether the DOT has thought about that and evaluated it and has recommendations.
Chief Goldberg.
Thank you to the chair, to Representative Prox.
that unfortunately is not an area of expertise for myself. I am mostly concerned with land use agreements, boundary crossing agreements, liaising with the FAA for mandatory federal approvals of certain types of land use agreements on the airport. We have no current impacted land use agreements in the area proposed, so I have not looked at this beyond my personal lens of whether or not it will impact any current agreements. I would have to refer wildlife questions to our safety and security section of the department.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Chief Goldberg, for that. And Representative Josephson or your staff, at any time, maybe if you want to answer a question, please let me know on Homer, the wildlife, and the safety of aviation in that area.
Madam Co-Chair, yeah, I could probably address a number of things that have come up in these discussions. And to Representative Prax, for the Homer Airport critical habitat area, the primary species of concern there is moose, and especially winter moose habitat. And I don't know that the airport has issues with moose getting through the boundary fence onto the field there. I won't say that it's never happened, but I'm not aware that that's an issue. As far as any habitat enhancement goes, in my 25 years of managing these sites at Department of Fish and Game, which again, I can't speak for the department, I'm retired from there now, but we've never discussed doing any habitat enhancement there. In fact, there was a proposal a number of years ago to rewater with the installation of culverts under the spit road to allow more tidal water to influx the small cove that's right below the old lighthouse complex at the base of the spit. And that enhancement project was basically nixed by FAA because it would enhance bird habitat on the approach route or the airport down there. So I would assume that any other project surrounding the airport would be subject to similar concerns by FAA. I believe the FAA regulations allow them to weigh in and approve or disapprove. And this may be a better question for DOT to answer, within 5 miles of an airport, as far as any bird wildlife enhancement projects go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meehan, for answering the question.
Through the chair, to Mr. Meehan, it would seem to me that we should have some sort of official acknowledgement from the FAA. Yeah, I have no way of knowing. But it would seem that we should have some sort of acknowledgement that somebody has looked at this and has said, well, yeah, got to think about it, or nope, we looked at it, no problem.
Through the chair, Representative Prax, yeah, we have been communicating with DOT on the issue, and I would anticipate a response from them concerning any concerns with, the proposal around the airport.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meehan. Yes, Representative Prax,
specifically through the chair, should we have something written, because we could be doing something that has to be undone at some later date because the FAA is concerned about airplanes running into either moose or birds or wolves or dogs or whatever.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Prax. It is a good point. It's a valid concern. I'll also point out that the existing critical habitat area, the Homer Airport critical habitat area, is immediately adjacent to the airport. So we've already got that issue in place with the existing critical habitat area.
Okay. And then follow up. So the additional area, is that more than 5 miles away from the airport?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, no. It's immediately adjacent to the airport, just on the south side.
South side, okay.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Prax. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. as a pilot who used to land at Homer a lot, that was always a concern, and the tower would let you know if there were birds in the area. But if the I know that Mr. Mills is listening, that we do receive airport improvement funds from the FAA that are used to make enhancements to add lights and buffer zones, et cetera, et cetera. And they do have concerns about wildlife infringement, bird hazing, bird strikes, that kind of thing. I believe there is an airport management plan that must be in place before AIP money goes to the state, and so we should probably consult with the airport manager at Homer Airport or potentially the regional director of the FAA to find out if these changes would have an effect. Currently, if the current critical habitat area is not causing engendering bird strikes, there's a legitimate question as to whether expanding it might make it a more attractive place for nesting waterfowl and for migratory waterfowl or just local ducks. So I think that information is available. At the very least, the National Transportation Safety Board tries to keep track of incidents, including bird strikes. So at the very grossest measure, there might be some measure of how many bird strikes there are at the airport. But the better source is probably going to be the airport manager.
And the NASB.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
Oh, the NASB would know.
NASB.
Okay. Representative Elam, do you want to add that? What was that?
The FAA, NASB, they all track all that kind of aircraft strikes. And
okay. Yes. So we will. Yeah. Do you want to respond to Representative Sadler?
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just to add a little bit more to that discussion is really with the additions to the critical habitat area. I would not anticipate any change in the way those lands are managed than what they have been up until now, which are basically just, a wetland area joining the airport. So I wouldn't anticipate there being really any change.
But we must ask the animals.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sadler. I like that idea.
That was Secretary Halala.
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair. So I'd like to ask a specific question on the Potter's Marsh map that you guys, the updated Potter's Marsh map. I don't know if you can get it up there.
Oh, there's the Homer Airport.
We've got the Homer. We've got to ask the ducks. There it is. Is that it? Yeah. Yeah, so the you turned it around. Okay, so you have two pieces. Okay, so those two red arrows up top. I assume the yellow area in the middle is the range. Is that true? Is that where the range is?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, the Rabbit Creek Shooting Park, what we call the rifle range, is over in here.
Okay, so the range is on the left side. Those two pieces right there, I'm not sure. I guess I don't understand the reasoning to put that in the refuge since it's not on the coast. Is it? Why are those crucial to incorporate?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb. Just to orient you here a little bit, the access road into the Powder Marsh Boardwalk comes in off the Seward Highway approximately where the cursor is,
right,
and goes right along the edge of this first parcel and then into the refuge in this area, and there's the parking lot and the boardwalks that go off into the marsh. This parcel here was purchased as Mr. John Ross with the Conservation Fund testified earlier. It was purchased with Pittman Robertson funds and other donations to add to it. And it's a contiguous wetland with the marsh.
Okay.
It's not impacted or filled property. And it provides green belt property for the marsh access. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it potentially could have been filled. So that was just to extend the marsh habitat for, I would have to say, probably mostly a visitor experience as they're entering the marsh,
mm-hmm.
But contiguous wetlands. This parcel up here is actually part of the parcel that the rifle range used to occupy. The rifle range history, I believe, goes back into the 1950s, mm-hmm. before statehood. There was a community organization that got a lease from the Bureau of Land Management, the federal agency that owned the land, to run this as a rifle range. And, of course, this was the outskirts of Anchorage in those days. After statehood and a number of years operating, Fish and Game eventually acquired the parcel from the previous leaseholder, and converted it to state ownership. And then in it was either the late 70s, early 80s when this new Seward Highway was constructed. It basically bisected that parcel and cut this parcel off. So that's part of the original Rifle Range parcel. Why add it to the refuge? Because it's a state parcel. It's technically managed by the Department of Fish and Game. It does contain wetlands in there, even though it's isolated from the rest of the coastal refuge. But it provides some wildlife habitat in there. And if Fish and Game's trying to manage it, as the previous manager, again, I can't speak for Fish and Game, it's hard to manage an isolated parcel that does not fall under Fish and Game regulations as far as refuge management goes. So it was just to give Fish and Game the additional tools to manage this property.
Follow up. So are you taking the parcel above it too?
Through the chair, Representative Colon. No, the parcel above that is a DOT parcel. So that blue area right there, that's two distinct parcels, and the arrow pointing to the southern parcel is the only one that we're proposing to be added to the refuge.
That seems contiguous with the other parcel. Is it DOT doesn't want to let it go? Or
to the chair, Representative Colon. We haven't approached DOT on that one. I believe it's not as wet. If you recall, as you leave Potter Marsh, you go up what's called Potter Hill. Mm-hmm. And that parcel is quite a bit drier. I can't remember if there's any wetlands on it at all. There may not be any wetlands for that matter. But that lower parcel does have wetlands. It's actually that lower parcel contains an old flood channel of Rabbit Creek. And, of course, Rabbit Creek was significantly altered over 100 years ago when the railroad was constructed down here. Mm-hmm. So it contains that old flood channel, which stays watered and provides some waterfowl habitat in there.
Yeah, I think the railroad created Potter's Marsh, didn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so I thought. Thank you.
Okay. Seen Representative Fields.
I was just going to make an observation that this is encyclopedic knowledge of many, many parcels across the state, so thank you.
That was going to be one of my final thoughts, too. What is your favorite place of these refuges and wildlife?
Madam Chair, to give away my secret, but I've always tried to get more people to visit it, and it would be Round Island in the Walrus Island State Game Sanctuary out in Bristol Bay.
I would love to go visit that place. Yes, thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could back up and just provide a little bit more insight on one of the questions that was asked earlier. Again, drawing from my year's experience at Fish and Game managing this program, I'd agree with the commissioner when he said that critical habitat areas generally have a slightly higher bar for managing them as far as allowable impacts and activities that go in there. The on-the-ground reality of that, you know, from managing these areas for 25 years is there really wasn't that much practical difference between a management plan and permanent activities for a refuge versus a critical habitat area. But acknowledging that that theoretically is an issue, that's why in the proposed purpose statement that combines the critical habitat area and the refuge purpose statements, we added a new subsection to, as the commissioner pointed out, refuges being a little bit more permissive of hunting, fishing, trapping, public use activities. We added a provision to the purpose statement that says subject to A of the subset of the section, which is the primary purpose for habitat protection, the department may allow hunting, trapping, fishing, subsistence, and so forth activities. So it was clearly to indicate that these areas are not only for protecting habitats and wildlife populations, but they're also for public use.
Okay. I have a question for the chair, for you.
Representative
Clinton. I was just wanting some clarity on the CS. I don't think, unless I missed it, was there a motion to accept, or where are we at with that? I had a question on one of the changes, but I didn't know if we were dealing with that today or
we
later.
We are later, okay. At a later date.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
This is a large bill, so we want to just digest it.
Madam Chair,
Representative Josephson?
Yes, Andy Josephson for the record. The CS was adopted at your last hearing.
Oh.
Thank you for that. Okay. Seeing no further. Yeah. At ease. All right. House Resources back on the record. What we're going to do next is we're going to have Representative Josephson's staff and Representative go over the memo and our packets and go over the new maps and then answer any questions from the committee.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair, Joe Meehan again, a staff for Representative Josephson, to go over the memo, which hopefully answered a lot of questions from the last two hearings that we had. I guess one thing I just wanted to point out, too, is the overall purpose.
Representative Sadler.
For the record, Mr. Meehan, would you say which memo and dated which? Because there's a couple different memos. It's for clarity purposes, please. Okay.
Yeah, through the co-chair, Representative
to the
Sadler.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, March 17, 2026 memo from Representative Josephson and to the committee. Referencing House Bill 321. So one thing we tried to do with this memo is to clarify the overall purpose of the bill, which was to facilitate a more efficient and effective management of these collectively called special areas by the department and to promote better and wider public understanding, use, and appreciation of these areas. Which ultimately will hopefully lead to stewardship of people protecting and using these areas. There was a lot of questions at the first hearing about purpose statements, what makes a refuge, sanctuary, critical habitat area, state park. And so I tried to summarize all of those different designations, both across fish and game designations and state parks. Department of Natural Resources, which includes things like state parks, recreation areas, special management areas, forests, recreation rivers. And I included attachments for all the LDAs or legislatively designated areas, a fact sheet that DNR puts together and updates periodically with the number of acres and units that are in there. And I also included as an attachment the statutory purpose statements for all the fish and game managed areas and then a sampling of the DNR managed areas just to give the committee an idea of what those involve. So the name changes, as we've discussed several times, we would combine game refuges, wildlife refuges, and critical habitat areas into one term, wildlife refuge. And then likewise, game sanctuaries, wildlife sanctuaries would be combined into one wildlife sanctuary with purpose statements. With the exception of combining critical habitat area and refuge, the purpose statements would basically stay the same, and certainly all of the individual purpose statements for these areas would stay the same. And I'll point out, too, that not every refuge and critical habitat area has a standalone purpose statement. There is an overarching purpose statement for each of those categories that, as we've talked about, we've combine those into one to make it a little bit more clear and a little bit more understandable by the public. Again, the firearms access closure, hopefully the CS change helped clarify exactly what we were targeting target shooting. Whereas it would not influence at all hunting, fishing, trapping activities and use and carrying of firearms in a refuge area. It would be strictly related to the discharge of firearms, primarily for target shooting and access sites for public safety. And as far as lead contamination goes, lead legal considers that a public safety issue as well if we had contaminated soils and people interacting with those soils. We've talked a bit about the closure of sections or areas within a game refuge for public safety. Again, the targeted site, the only one that I can think of would be the Rabbit Creek Shooting Range, downrange area, is to be able to close that off. As far as any concerns of the department getting overzealous about closing areas, it would still have to go through a regulatory process and would give the public, say, and testimony and adopting any regulations that would close any particular area, whether it's downrange or the Rabbit Creek Shooting Range or not. As one of the managers of the refuge in my previous career, I had always thought exactly a light or a flag that's visible from the area would be the appropriate way to go to indicate when the area is closed. As far as the maps, we can run through as many maps as you'd like. I don't know how much time we have to do that, but I could certainly go through any of the maps and do any explanation. But I try to correlate the maps with the sections in the bill for the area, starting with the hunt enclosure for McNeil and then running through each section and what refuge that pertained to, and to provide some details on why we're proposing a boundary change in that particular refuge or critical habitat area.
Yep, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to ask a question. I noticed, Mr. Meehan, that there are some referenced areas in the language of the bill that do not have a corresponding map, or possibly it's just not in the new batch of maps. Can I assume that each of the areas, refuges, sanctuaries, et cetera, all have their own maps someplace in my packet? I guess my question are the new maps replace all the old maps, or are they supplementary?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the new maps are include all the areas that we're proposing any boundary changes. I know there are a few maps that I inserted in the original batch of maps, and in trying to simplify and reduce the load of maps, I just didn't include a few of those that were basically extraneous.
So following up. Cape Newenham State Game Refuge. I think I see in the old maps, but not in the new maps. I mean, clarify what you said is all the new maps provided to us are all the maps we should deal with this. But then I popped open my old maps and saw Cape Newenham, and I thought, oh gosh.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sadler, Cape Newenham should be in that new packet.
Okay, I don't think I saw
it. Should be the second one.
Nope. I reordered them, so. And therein lies the challenge of having to go through them all not to be able to see them. So I did not see it. Nope, don't.
So maybe, Mr. Meehan, we could make sure that we get that to the committee members?
Yeah. Certainly.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. So hate to just keep asking about this, but I want to make sure I understand Section 7. That's the firearms section, okay? So in your memo, it says the intent of Section 7 is to allow DFG to close through adoption of regulations certain limited areas in a refuge to the discharge of firearms for purposes other than hunting, trapping, and fishing. So since the Rabbit Creek Rifle Range is in a refuge, unless there's a carve-out I don't know about. How does that not affect the range itself? Or wouldn't they just close the range?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, I don't think there's any intent on closing the range at Rabbit Creek. If we're trying to correlate closure or discharge of firearms for the purposes of target shooting, well, the department just wouldn't go through a regulatory process to close the range that it manages to target shooting, if I'm following your connection there.
Yeah, it feels like that's what it's actually allowing them to do. I mean, the rifle range, there's been plenty of people who don't like it there. You know, this is not something, I mean, it's been there since the 50s, but there's lots of issues, you know, people don't want it there. And so if this were to pass, technically, from how I'm reading it, they could close the range because it's target shooting in a refuge. So that's why I wanted clarity.
Mm-hmm. Through the co-chair, Representative Cologne. I would think if the department wanted to close the range, they could do that regardless of this regulation. And I don't think that's at all the intent.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Josephson.
Andy Josephson, for the record. I haven't talked to Mr. Meehan about this, but I think we would consider it a friendly amendment if the amendment read that nothing in this act requires or otherwise allows DFNG to close the Rabbit Creek Rifle Range.
Okay. Thank you for that, Representative Josephson. Representative Fields?
Yes, I was going to say it. I think the obvious concern if this bill progresses is that it's a stalking horse for restricting gun use, which I don't think it is, and maybe we might consider some language like that just to make it really clear that that's not what would result, and I don't know what the best language would be, but I would be interested in supporting it so it wouldn't derail the positive effects within the bill.
Okay, Mr. Meehan, please proceed.
Madam Chair, that pretty much brings us to the end of the memo with the map. So if there's any particular map that someone wants to look at, we could certainly assess that.
Okay. All right, any further thoughts, questions?
Yeah.
Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, had you considered about 90% of this is not controversial, I think. And you have put in a whole bunch of work with a few controversial points. And frankly, I'd hate to see that lost in either the House or the other body or the executive branch taking negative action. So have you thought about dividing this into at least two bills, one with everything else and the other one with things that might be a problem, or several bills so people can grasp and understand what you're doing in half a dozen pages rather than 77? I say that because I did reach out to some folks in the Fairbanks area that kind of know something about this and know about land and fish and wildlife, and I don't. And I called them a couple of weeks ago, and they've been kind of looking at it, but they said, woof-da, just last weekend. And there's a lot of room for things to fall apart, and that would be the whole bill. So have you thought about dividing it up into two or three different bills?
Madam Chair, through the chair to Representative Prox. My sense of this is the folks that testified from Homer want the ban on want the ban on personal watercraft. But that is probably the more controversial feature. And that's fairly consistent with what the commissioner said. I think the other parts are much less controversial. I mean, he echoed what I've said, which is that part of the McNeil Sanctuary has been statutory closed forever, or for a very long time, and other parts for decades have been closed. So this doesn't seem to be a great hardship on the Board of Game and the course of action they want to take. It's actually pretty consistent with what they've been doing for decades. Mm-hmm. So I don't view this. I concede that I'm not happy to say it, but I concede that the personal watercraft issue is a contentious issue. But beyond that issue, I think that the bill fits together pretty nicely.
And follow up? Yes, I appreciate that you would think that way because you've spent a lot of time at this. But I'm concerned that there are a few things in here that risks killing the bill, either through not passing through one body or the other, where there's a bunch of people who haven't thought about this as much, and the executive branch. And this is an up or down when it gets to the executive branch anyway. I just risk management for getting the bulk of this work through, which I would like to see happen. So it's up to you. Okay. It's just give it a thought, and we'll offer that.
Yep. Through the chair, Representative Prox. I think most of the items in this bill would be a legitimate standalone bill. Mm-hmm. It's a compilation of the years that I managed the program and identifying many of these areas that I thought needed to be improved. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure at this point going that route would time-wise be feasible, certainly not for this session. And so it's certainly a legitimate point, and as Representative Josephson said, we recognize that at least one, maybe two of the provisions are raising some eyebrows. And overall, I would say, particularly at the boundary issues and some of the other items go through, it would still have been worth it, even if some of it is dropped out.
Thank you. Representative Klum.
Yeah, I promise he'll be my last one. And it might keep everybody. But I did have a question on the Palmer Hay Flats State Game Refuge. There's a several different, so we got an excluded area, state land added to Palmer Hay Flats. So I guess my question is, can you tell me what the magenta, I don't understand what the RCRAC magenta items are, and why the places that you want to take, they seem to be right in the middle. Were those actually just excluded by accident? Were they excluded on purpose? Because you also have shoreline box as well. If you could just walk through that.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Colomb. As far as the magenta areas go, which I'll use the cursor here just to illustrate them, on the eastern end, those are old channels now abandoned from the Matanuska River. It's now shifted to the south. Originally, when the refuge was described on this east end, they used parcel descriptions, platted lines, and those parcels ended at mean high water of the river. Okay. So technically, the river channels were never in the refuge. The rivers now have migrated to the south and dried those channels up, not completely dried. They're now wetlands. And so this would just pull those channels into refuge jurisdiction. Excuse me. And then in about the middle of the map, Fernary Rabbit Slough, for those that know the area, same issue there, is the parcels were described, at ending at mean high water. And as the state acquired those parcels, it basically left the river channel itself out of the description, so this would pull it in. Those two parcels in the middle there, outlined in black and red dashed, those were privately owned parcels. Oh. So at the time the refuge was created, they were excluded from refuge jurisdiction. And since that time, the state has acquired those parcels. Same with up in that top right corner, those two little small parcels that stick out. Those were actually, I believe those were acquired from the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, who repossessed them on foreclosure and then donated them to the state. And since they were not part of the original refuge, they have to be added back in. And then the last parcel on the south there, although the stippling makes it look like it's mud flats, it's actually not. This is what's called accreted land, mainly from rebound from the 64 earthquake. And all that area out there is valuable marsh wetlands used by duck hunters, important winter moose habitat. And it's extended, if you look on aerial imagery, it's extended out into this red boxed area. So that's why we're interested in pulling that in.
And again, that wouldn't affect the duck, the people who want to hunt ducks?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb. No, would not at all. This is actually one of South Central Alaska's most popular duck hunting area. Mm-hmm. And actually by acquiring these properties, it allows Fish and Game to manage it for duck hunting. That's the one of the primary emphasis user groups in this refuge.
Okay. Thank you.
Amazing. Representative Fields.
I was just going to note that that rabbit slough has become very popular for winter recreation.
Never been out there. This is very fascinating. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. During the public testimony today, I heard a lot and clearly the opinions of local people around Kachemat Bay and Homer about personal watercraft and about the airport areas and a little bit about Gustavus, but it was primarily focused on Kachemat Bay. One thing that I think is kind of lacking from the input on this is there are other outdoors groups that have an interest in these areas. For example, the Resident Hunters of Alaska, the Alaska Outdoor Council, Ducks Unlimited, Safari Club, et cetera. And I've been concerned to not hear from any of them. I'm not sure if there was any outreach to them or ordinarily, often in public testimony, you get a plethora of people on one side and a couple outliers. Sometimes it's even, but I'm just the absence of anybody from the outdoor sportsmen's and advocates group concerns me, and I would just wonder if the sponsor has done any outreach to try and get invited testimony from that side of these issues.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
I think Mr. Meehan, Andy Josephson for the record, Mr. Meehan's prepared to speak to that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sadler. Yeah, I've spent weeks reaching out to various groups, email, phone, and otherwise, actually some in person. I did supply to the House Resources email address a list of all the organizations that we've contacted, including governmental agencies, various conservation user group organizations, hunting groups, native organizations. We've received back so far 30 individual written comments, 11 from organizations, and one that we heard of from today, governmental or entity from City of Gustavus. But to answer your direct question, yeah, so we had testimony today from Alaska Waterfowl Association, and I've also reached out, haven't gotten responses from various hunting organizations such as the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, Alaska Outdoor Council, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Resident Hunters of Alaska, Ducks Unlimited, Alaska Professional Hunters Association, Safari Club International, Congressional Sportsmen's Association. And that's it for hunting-oriented groups. I know a lot of them have to run it by their boards, and they haven't had meetings in time for this hearing to discuss it and decide whether they would support the bill or not.
Okay.
So perhaps some forthcoming.
We'd like to hear from them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Meehan.
I'm
follow
sorry.
Follow up?
Yeah, just so you said you have received comments from 30, I think, here. Are those all in our packet already? Or
I would defer to the committee staff to know what's in your packet.
Do we have them? I just missed it, or?
Okay, yes. Representative Sadler, we have it, and we'll distribute it to you after the committee.
The hearing. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. See no further questions. All right. So with that, Mr. Meehan, thank you for all of your hard work. And you've done, you know, a lot of history of these places. And if you haven't started a book, I can't wait till you take this bill and turn it into a book someday. I would love to purchase it and learn about the history of Alaska. And I love maps. So
thank you, Madam Chair. And just to point out, fishing game was my second career.
Okay. And I'm just, yeah, thank you so much for your presentation today and all of your work. That completes the agenda for our House Resources. Sorry. Oh, we will now hold this bill over for another hearing, and I'm going to set an amendment deadline for Monday, April 6th at noon to our committee aides, Sarah Snowberger and Calvin Zullo. That completes the agenda for House Resources Committee meeting today. Our next House Resources Committee meeting will be this Wednesday, April 1st. What a great day, at 1 p.m. We'll be hearing from Nick Fulford from Gaffney Klein on House Bill 381, oil and gas property tax. We will not be holding a House Resources Committee on Friday, April 3rd, or Monday, April 6th. The time is 2:49 p.m., and this hearing from the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.